thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, guys. So we just had the 2024 Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. Of course, we did not have this race last year. It was rained out. So excited to be back in Italy. Obviously, with McLaren winning the last race and Ferrari looking at so much better recently, there was a lot of talk coming into the weekend about Ferrari getting their first podium in here. And I don't even remember how many years. It was like 8 years or something like that.
Long time. 18 years, maybe. It was like 2004, 2005, Schumacher.
Jesus.
They wheeled out the stat like at least three or four times over the course of the, well, race day anyway. And I can't believe I forgot it.
It was a long time.
The other stat that they wheeled out as well was the, you know, the exciting prospect of 100% probability of safety cars for this race.
Yes.
They mentioned that on more than a couple of occasions. So into this, I was excited and hopeful that we could get something going on that would spice things up at the end with the safety
cars. Does that just mean that there's been safety cars at every single one coming into this? Or is there some like other stat that makes the probability 100?
I remember that one.
Well, yeah. I guess we can segue that into.
That's right. No, but I guess there has been one every year. I think there were seven during the F2 race or something yesterday.
Jesus.
Well, on Saturday, I mean, I don't know. Something like
that's crazy.
But it can throw up some accidents because the walls are pretty close, tight racing, and,
well, they said they'd moved the gravel in closer to the track as well. So I guess if you made a mistake, you could be off into the barriers more easily.
You're not going to drive out as easily. So you could get beached rather than if it's a runoff area, you just drive off. So the probability of getting machinery onto course to fish people out of gravel is higher, right? Yeah. I thought about it that way.
Well, I mean, early on in the weekend, everyone was struggling to stay on the track. There were guys going in the gravel left and right, and both Alonso and Checo had, you know, crashes in FP3. So everything was pointing towards there being a safety car during the race from what we saw earlier on in the weekend. Shockingly enough, Alonso had the slowest time in qualifying, but I guess that because Logan Sargeant, his lap time got deleted. Technically, he was last, but then Alonso started from the pit lane, so he was last again. So
Logan Sargeant set three fast laps, and they all got deleted for track limits.
Oh my goodness! And
that's all.
I don't think any of them were good enough to get out of Q3, Q1 anyway. But
and Aston Martin brought a bunch of upgrades for this race as well, right? And I guess they're just not working.
Yeah,
like, I mean, made the car worse or undrivable or a handful, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
adjective you want to use.
Yeah, I mean, it's the opposite of McLaren, right? So McLaren, their correlation seems to be really, really good. So what they think is going to happen when they stick stuff on the car is going to be an upgrade, and it happens. It looks like Aston Martin and Mercedes, who share a wind tunnel, are seeming to have issues with getting upgrades to work. So Aston Martin get their own wind tunnel up and running at some point during the course of this year, but I don't know, sounds like a wind tunnel thing. I don't know,
hopefully that will help them. I guess more surprises were that Checo was not able to get out of Q2, and Lance as well. I mean, Lance has been struggling in qualifying all year, but both Aston Martins are not able to make it into Q3, and Checo not making it into Q3. So I mean, Checo crashed in FP3, so we don't know what kind of
what situation is dragged on.
Yeah.
And of course, maybe that gets in the back of your mind as well. You're not quite as aggressive going into certain corners. So, yeah, that was definitely a big shock.
Yeah. And then, you know, Max, I mean, the Red Bulls, we didn't really talk about it, but the Red Bulls were not looking comfortable all weekend long. And it was really everyone else around not being able to put in a great lap that would, that gave Max pole, essentially. I mean, if you're not going to challenge Max, he's just going to take it easily, right?
Was it in the third period of qualifying when they had the track dominance logo information up, and it was a combination of the Yuki and Charles Leclerc, I think, that basically had the best combined time around the circuit. Like, Max wasn't even on there, even though he was on.
Wow,
putting in fast times.
Yuki had a great qualifying. I mean, he's starting to really wring the neck of that thing, and there were a couple of times where he put it on provisional pole.
Yeah, he was putting in some fast laps. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was definitely pulling for him to get up there, and it was good. Yeah, it was good to see the McLarens, you know, pushing the Red Bull. After Lando's win last week, you know, are we finally seeing the end of this Red Bull dominance? Who knows?
So, I was driving home from work the other day. It was like the first day I had work since Lando won the last race, and so I was wearing my hat and I was wearing my jacket. I'm driving home from work. It was nice out. The windows were down, and some guy like in the lane next to me, like stop. He pulls in front of me, stops, and pulls back a little bit. And I'm just like, oh fuck! Like, what did I do? And he just points at me. He's like, nice win on Sunday. And I was like, oh yes, it was the best.
You're still riding high, Jason. You're still riding high.
I'm going to be riding this the whole season. I just think Lando is going to win every single race for the rest of the year now.
Well, I mean, technically, Oscar out-qualified Lando, though, right? I mean, he lost a couple of spots because he got penalized for what, obstructing somebody in
impeding Kevin.
He has had a really big impact on qualifying for this race, because
that's true.
If it wasn't for the draft, the toe that Hulkenberg gave
to
Max down the straight, and then his teammate with Oscar and the impeding.
Although to be fair,
it wasn't really Magnussen's fault. It was McLaren's fault for not telling Oscar that K-Mag was there. But that it could have been Piastri on pole. Could have been McLaren front row.
Could have been. But
it wasn't.
It wasn't. And it was, did I say it was Hulkenberg's first time driving at Imola as well?
I can believe that.
Which is cannot be true.
An unbelievable statistic. No,
unbelievable. Cannot possibly be true.
Is that actually true?
It is actually true.
Yeah, it's true. He's driven 250 Grand Prix, but nothing at Imola.
Yeah, because he only came back last year, and it was rained off last year. Yeah. And Emilia Romagna did come back onto the calendar during COVID, right?
He was just not there. Yeah, that was when he was out.
Wow.
Yeah, weird.
I mean, how long was that race not on, like, not part of the calendar?
A good while. Because that's one of the things that a lot of people are saying about it. It's like, well, yeah, they've kind of made it, like, from a safety perspective and a attendance perspective, they've kind of uplifted it a little bit. But the track itself isn't really conducive to racing these much, much bigger cars now than they had, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s when they were racing there before. These cars are much bigger, not as nimble. And it's a pretty narrow track. If you look at it compared to Abu Dhabi, for example, you see Abu Dhabi's like a 5-lane highway and Imola's like a, you know, 2-lane road.
Continue the conversation on pine-sports.com. That's pine-sports.com and the Pine Sports Discord, which you can find linked on the website. And join us in a one-of-a-kind fantasy Formula One contest at coopsf1.com. That's COOPSF1.com, where you can put your theories to the test.
We did see some cool stuff during the pre-race show. Both Pierre and Seb got to drive different Senna cars. Pierre drove like the very first car that Senna drove in F1. I can't even remember what team it was.
Coleman?
Yeah. Him and what was her name? Naomi Schiff, I guess, both drove it, and that was her first time driving an F1 car. So that was kind of cool. And then Seb drove his F1 car. I guess he owns that one.
He owns it, yeah. The MP48.
Is that the classic McLaren, the red and white sort of?
Yeah. It, well, slightly different. It was the all white on the front. It was the 93 Donington in the wet.
Oh, okay. Not the. Oh yeah, I was thinking of like the 88,
you're like 89, yeah. 88,
the Marlboro.
Yeah.
Straight up packet of cigarettes.
Yeah.
That was back when it was Marlboro versus Rothmans versus Camel
versus Gitan.
Yeah, Gitan.
Responsible Ligier.
There's the French team. Filterless.
Yes. Yellow.
Yeah, and did you guys see Eddie Irvine on the grid walk? That little
didn't see any of the grid walk at all.
No. Why? What happened with Eddie? He
just seemed weird. He was just saying some like crazy off the wall shit while he was being interviewed by Karun on the grid, which he obviously has never like done a grid walk before, not the Martin style. So it was just like all very awkward. It was strange, dude.
I think the regular hosts were taking a week off this week,
right? Yeah, that's right. Martin Roth was not there.
I mean, there's Benjamin a lot of races
covering.
It's a big, big commitment.
I think
the next one
that Crofty's missing is Austria, I think, because I saw Harry Benjamin tweeting, "See you in Austria." So,
right.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I still remember. I remember this race, obviously, 1994, like almost like it was yesterday. I was at university at the time, watching it and like, have it all unfolded like a day you'll never forget. I mean, especially with Ratzenberger passing away just the day before. But of course, he wasn't, he was a test driver.
And Barrichello's massive shunt on the Friday.
He had a huge crash. Yeah, he went right up into the into the fencing, didn't he, Barrichello?
Yeah.
I think.
Jeez.
And then Senna. But where were you, Nick? Were you watching it?
I was at my house. Like I was 16. I was watching it at home with my brother and my dad.
Jesus. Yeah.
I remember the layout of the living room and I remember the couch I was sitting on.
I remember being in like, because nobody had TVs in their rooms or at university, so there was one big projection TV in the common room. We're all watching it on there. I remember that. Like, yeah, what were you, Jason? Three?
I was two. I was probably watching Beauty and the Beast at that time.
Yeah,
that would be my guess.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Something like that. Arthur, something that was on.
Still crazy to think they ran the race afterwards. Like, just everything that happened.
They were ruthless.
Was nuts. Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, there were people dying like every other race back in the 70s.
Like 1968, I think, was the worst season where basically someone died every month.
Yeah. Well, I think we recommended that documentary. I forget the name of it now.
What was it? One.
Yeah. So. Go and watch it if you haven't already.
Yeah. If you want to be sad about the sport that we love so much.
Well, for whatever we say around, the size of the cars and the racing and the trickiness of this, that, and the other, that's one thing that they seem to have gotten right. Safety.
But a lot of that is down to Ayrton Senna, because it's like...
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Arguably the best at the time.
Yeah.
Isn't supposed to die in a car, right?
No. Yeah. I guess that's really
it. Well, that's lifted the mood.
Yeah. Let's get on to the race. So let's see. Everybody pretty much started on medium tires, except for Checo on hards. There were a few guys way in the back that started on hards as well, and then Alonso started on soft tires from the pit lane. So that was kind of weird.
I wasn't quite sure, yeah, what Perez's thinking was there, because everybody was predicting a one 100%, stopper.
100% chance of safety car. That's what he was thinking.
Pretty much.
It's like, as long as you can to increase, you know, to maximize the potential for a safety car to happen, that you could probably get like 40-something laps out of what, 65 laps in the race, was it?
Right.
You know, if it's like 60 laps and you can get 40 through, that's a 70% chance of safety car during your stint.
I don't know what sort of Formula One mathematics you were using there, but
it's science, Martin.
It's science.
It sounds good.
Dr. Cooper, it's fine. It's called science.
It's called science. Therefore, we start on the hard tire, but only, that's what Perez's calculator said, but yeah, didn't really necessarily play out for him, but yeah.
Yeah. But Max had a great jump once again, was able to keep the lead going into turn one. Let's see, a couple guys were able to move up. Lewis moved up a spot and was right behind George. Nico moved up two spots. That was pretty good. Moving up into P8. Checo up in the points by the end of turn one. But both of the RBs, the V-cars, whatever you want to call them, both losing two spots on the first lap. Disappointing from them. And Danny out of the points after one lap in Yuki and P9. And it looked like Max was going to have a typical race from, you know, lap four. He's pulling away from Lando out of DRS range already and gaining time quickly. By the time he got to 10 laps, he had over a 2-second gap. Max doing his typical Max thing.
Yeah, that was it. It was, you know, keeping your head in the first corner, like sealed the first stint, essentially, right? And on that medium tire, it was just really working pretty well for the Red Bull. Max just kept pulling away, like, what, about a quarter of a second a lap, something like that?
Yeah, pulling away fast. And then I guess Albon came in for a crazy early stop, which was unexpected. And then he all of a sudden was going really, really slow. And he thought that there was maybe one of the tires weren't on correctly.
Yeah. And I did you see Ted's notebook, not the qualifying notebook, the post-race one?
No.
Apparently he was saying that, like, when they went to, so the front right guy, who I actually know who it is, because he was really cool with us in Japan. So when he went to push to engage the tire gun to put the wheel on, seemingly he nudged the button that said the tire's good, right? Because there's it's interesting because that guy showed us the wheel gun when we were there in Suzuka. So it's kind of cool because you kind of lock it and then you pull it, you squeeze the trigger and pull the wheel off, and then there's like a mechanism in it which reverses the pull, and then you push it in, and then there's a button that you push to say that the wheel is on, right? And that then ties to the red and green, you know, the green light above the driver, and says to go. It seems like maybe as he was just engaging the gun to put the wheel back on, he hit the button and it gave the green light. That's kind of what I took what Ted
he did,
said
the wheel,
in the thing.
The wheel went on the car. Like, he did so something.
It went on, but it did
not
go all the way on.
All the way on, right. Yeah. Not completely.
So it was
right.
Wow. So Albon was saying he could hear or feel like a scraping. So it's like the wheel's turning, but it's because it's not on the hub. But it was held on long enough. I'm surprised he wasn't meatball flagged or black flagged or something, because he went all the way around. He did get a penalty for it though, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't obvious. It wasn't like it was wobbling
crazy, though. No,
So it must have been super close to being on correctly, is my assumption. Yeah. But unlucky, I guess, just the way that happens. Yeah. It's interesting, the intricacies of the processes they put in place. Back in the day, they had to hold your arm up in the air to show that it was on correctly or whatever. Clearly they don't do that anymore. They can save a tenth or a thousandth of a second, they'll save it, right?
Yeah.
And the pit
I mean, that thought process that you're having was exactly what I was thinking at the time, because they also have like, and it's like the jack, the front and right jack, they're also connected to the green light. Well, they're also connected to the guns. So as they're kind of coming down, it's like, it's all one. And it's like a release mechanism that goes across everything. Just to try and shave off the human reaction time for all the different components of it.
Because they've got they all angle their pits now as well. Like they angle it that when the car's coming in, it doesn't go fully parallel with the, or perpendicular, whatever. Parallel to the track, straight. they angling in still. They have to pull out harder to get back onto the pit lane, but that saves them a little bit of time too. Just angling.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is down to the team to decide. Because now I guess everyone's doing it. Maybe everybody's first one did it, and then it's like they've had a really good idea. Because essentially, when you're coming in, you want to like be straight on so that you're not locking up and doing craziness. And when you're pulling out, you can have a bit more lock on it, right?
You can get more turn out of the car at low speed than coming in and stopping. Yeah, it makes sense now, but I wonder what the next innovation will be. Car never actually stops. We managed to change the tires without
That'd be crazy. So let's see. That was on lap 10, and that essentially ruined any chance Albon had of moving up. Oscar was getting pretty close to Carlos, but he wasn't able to really make any moves on him for quite a while. Let's see. Yuki was really the first guy from the top 10 to pit, trying to undercut Nico ahead of him. Let's see. Now Max has over 5 second lead over Lando. So it's really sinking in that it's going to be another Max race like we've seen. Checo on lap 18 goes into the gravel again, just like all weekend. He just hasn't been able to keep it on track. Luckily, it didn't really make much difference for him in the race.
he lost himself 5-6 seconds, I guess. He went, just couldn't get the car stopped. He missed his braking point or carried too much speed, whatever it was. But yeah, he was able to at least keep it going and make his way out the gravel. But yeah, untidy racing at best.
Yeah. We're still 10 laps later and Oscar still hasn't been able to get by Carlos. So, I mean, what did they say? This is the second most difficult track to pass on the calendar after Monaco. Like Alonso is saying something that it's like even more difficult to pass here than it is in Singapore. That's saying how difficult it is to pass here. Yeah. So,
because there aren't really any like real braking events, right?
Yeah.
Because Tamburello, right, which is the first corner, right, which was a super fast corner and then became a chicane in 95. It's fast. There's no real braking event there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Imola, there aren't really any straights at Imola. Where is even the DRS zone? It's coming along the start-finish straight, I guess, but you're not flying into a hard braking event at the first chicane. The hairpin, for what it is, isn't at the end of a long straight. So taking opportunities, you're relying on somebody to make a mistake almost. You put pressure on them and you need them to make a mistake to get by.
Yeah. And even like that one with the DRS at the start finish line. I mean, there's a kink in that straight. So even if you're not in the perfect position to line up right next to him down the straight, you're never going to be able to make a pass going into that first corner.
You have to go around the outside of the first corner, hope the guy plays ball, and then you sneak down the inside of the second. Which we saw a couple of people do.
We saw some crazy moves throughout this race, some that haven't seen before through the chicanes. But let's see. George finally pit on lap 22. And then I guess Lando and Checo both responded to that. Lando in P2 at the time.
No, not
Checo. I guess Checo didn't. No, because he was gone long.
Everybody, yeah, all the top runners started pitting after Russell.
Oscar responded.
Norris, Piastri, Max, Leclerc.
Yep. And Lando was able to pass Checo into turn one just coming out of the pits, or it was just one lap after he'd come out. So he didn't lose too much time to Checo, which was a worry. Let's see. And then Charles pit on the next lap. And he had really lost a lot of time waiting to pit after the McLarens. He dropped behind both Lando and Oscar.
So yeah, the guys on the fresher tires were able to get them going. And so the undercut worked pretty well. Is that the undercut or is that the overcut?
That's the undercut. You were right. they were saying that the undercut might not be all that effective because of how long the pit exit is, and they were all going on to hard tires, which are harder to warm up.
Yeah, that's right. It's the longest pit lane in Formula One, apparently.
Yeah, they were saying that, yeah. So let's see. And then Lewis went slow for a moment, but then we didn't really see much of it, and then we finally got a replay that he had also gone off track and into the gravel.
Yeah, he overcooked it.
But he didn't. I don't think he lost any spots for that. No. He had enough space around him that he was able to just get back on. Just like Checo earlier. And then people just started passing Checo like every other lap. Charles and Oscar both passed Checo within a few corners of each other. I mean, he's still on the same tires, the hard tires that he started on. So he's not even really defending all that much. They're just kind of flying by him. Let's see. Then finally, Carlos and Lewis came in for their stops. And like Carlos lost a bunch of time to Oscar. He fell behind George, or was like right in front of George, and George was right behind him battling to get ahead. And then Yuki and Nico, this is where it was. They both made crazy passes on the chicanes and both on Logan within a couple straights of each other.
Yeah. So they stuck it down the outside and then held it around the inside. But fair play to, I mean, everybody was, driving well, driving aggressively, but playing nice, giving people enough room. I don't know what sort of conversations are going on in the drivers' meetings. I mean, obviously, it is the 30-year anniversary of, one of the biggest deaths in Formula One. So nobody wanted any kind of accidents or people taking anybody out and things like that. So maybe that was on their mind. I don't know.
Right.
It's hard to think about that when you're behind the wheel. You got to react on instinct.
Sure. All right. So Carlos lined up Checo and got him going into turn one. And then he's almost 7 seconds behind Oscar. So he lost a bunch of time, staying out longer, waiting for a potential safety car.
The guaranteed safety car that didn't.
Yeah,
that didn't come.
That never came.
Not guaranteed, just a
bullet. Right.
60% of the time, it comes 100% of the time. Something like that.
Yep. 60% of the time it works every time. let's see. And then finally, Checo came into pit on lap 38, along with Lance and Kevin, who were nowhere near the points, really. Checo came out 1.5 seconds behind Danny in P11, so on the medium tires. So he has the racier tires where everyone around him is on hard tires, so he can make up something after all of that time falling back behind everybody. And he was able to get by Danny fairly quickly. I mean, two laps after coming out, he was by Danny and up into P10, I guess. I think Nico had dropped down a bit too. Or then he got right by Nico on the next lap and was able to get up into P9. So making time up quickly.
As we get, it was kind of boring up until this point. Really, I'm like super impressed that you managed to get an outline out for the first sort of 45 laps. it was not the most thrilling Grand Prix that I've ever seen.
No.
It was kind of falling into a, it was going to be nothing to write home about by this point.
But at this point, I mean, we heard on the radio, Lando was, he said he was struggling on the hard tires, and Charles was getting close to DRS range. He was kind of going in and out of DRS range at this point. Checo is still making moves and able to get by Yuki into turn one and up into P8. So, but at this point, he had a 30-second gap between him and Lewis in P7. So he was going to have to work some crazy magic in order to get any higher up than he was here. And then we saw, I think it was Joe and Kevin were battling with each other, and Kevin got right out of the way because Lando and Charles were coming up hot behind them. But Joe, it seemed like he ignored a bunch of blue flags. I don't think he got a penalty, but it seemed like he was ahead of them for a while and really brought the battle between Lando and Charles closer than it might have been.
Yeah, I mean, he might got out of the way, but the reason he got out of the way fast was to try and get as close up behind Charles as he could, so that, you know, trying to get Joe when Joe moves out of the way. Where's the thing, when if you're battling with someone in front and this guy's coming up behind you, you give way, and then as the person in front's trying to find a way to let the other people by, maybe try and catch him a little bit, you know, off center. But maybe that was what Joe was worried about, and he didn't move over for a long time, but he stayed in front as the backup pack.
Yeah. A few laps later, lap 48, Charles had a little moment while he was chasing Lando, and he went through the grass on the chicane and seemed to lose some time to Lando. And this is really where Lando started kind of gaining speed and pulled away from Charles and started maybe gaining time on Max, it seemed.
That's exactly when
Lando went from I'm struggling with my tires on lap 43 or 44. He sort of turned into a different person behind the wheel and was able to start banging in faster laps. So was there a little bit of subterfuge there, like towards Red Bull to, like, you know, don't worry about us back here? Or did he really just get more comfortable with the car and found some more time? But yeah, he just left Charles behind him. Charles became a non-factor.
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, maybe he fell into Charles's grasp a little bit because he was kind of keep his tires for the end. I think on the hard tire, I'm not sure how much hard tire running people do, but you only get two sets of hard tires all weekend, right? So kind of a bit of a step into the unknown, especially if you're tweaking the setup as well. So if you have a hard tire that you tested on one setup that doesn't work, like Red Bull did. So Red Bull on Friday, their setup was a little bit off, and they did their hard tire run on a setup that they didn't then want to put in the race because it would give them too much away. And, you know, so Mac was finding that he couldn't get the heat into the tire at all.
Right.
That's really where, you know, from about this point onwards, as Lando, who had nursed the tire and brought it in slowly and fallen back a little bit into Ferrari's there, but then there came a point at which Charles had been, you know, pushing a little bit to try and get right up there with Lando, and then went a little bit too far, went off across the grass at Variante Alta, and then you lose once you go over the grass, it seems like you kind of lose a lot of heat out of the tire.
Yep.
And that then kind of put an end to Charles' attack on Lando.
100%. Yeah. Then maybe Lando could just turn his attention to Max, and that's when he was able to put in the times, because he was like 7 or 7.5 seconds back around in the with about 40 laps gone.
Yeah.
Or so. And he just started eating into that by almost half a second or quite a few tenths of a second every lap.
Yeah. I kept going like back and forth with myself, like, can he really make up this time and with this much time left? Like, can he really do it? And I'm like, yeah, he can do it. And I'm like, is he really going to be able to do this? Just like back and forth. But then like, George came in on lap 53 to pit again after, I guess, Checo had made that pass, and it was too late for Lewis to come in for a pair of soft or for a set of soft tires. So George came in and did it, and that's how he ended up getting a fastest lap, just by losing one spot to Lewis, which I'm sure he was not happy about. I'm pretty sure he was complaining about it on the radio. He's just like, you're just giving Lewis an extra spot for me to get the fastest lap. But
it's funny, when I saw like an interview with him in the media pen, it was like, we're fighting over sixth and seventh, so I'm not really
that. Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, they just played the team game, and because while Lewis was behind George, if Lewis was to pit, he could end up stuck behind Checo.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy to pass on this track on that day. So they were like, yeah, he's going to be on better tires, but is he going to be that much faster in order to be able to get by Checo? They didn't want to take the risk, but they wanted the extra point as a team.
Right.
Just the way things are going. Actually, the way things are going, they're just going to be in this sort of no man's land, and 1 point probably won't make the difference, but they just went for maximum points as a team. But I think neither of George nor Lewis were particularly happy with where things ended up, and they did. Yeah. Everyone seems to go home miserable at Mercedes at the moment.
Yes. Yeah. They sure do. But Lando's still making crazy time. On lap 55, or I guess lap 54, he gained a whole second on Max on that lap, and he's under 2.5 seconds behind, and he keeps gaining more time. And then the second to last lap of the race, I mean, he's right on the edge of getting into DRS range, and it looked like he would have an opportunity to have it down like the last time down the straight before on the last lap. But he had this one little moment where he went a little too wide and just touched the gravel a little bit, and Max was able to gain that much time where Lando couldn't pull it back in to get DRS where he needed it. He got within DRS range on that last lap, but there was no opportunity for him to use it to overtake.
And that was, it was only really on that second to last lap where the announcers said that the DRS detection point was not right before the straight. It was two corners before as they come down, right? They've got the chicane where sharp off, and then they kind of drop down the hill to Ravatta. So that's like that double left-hander to finish the lap. The DRS detection point is before Ravatta.
Crazy.
I was super surprised at that when they said that, and I hadn't even noticed it before. But it just meant that, before they're even at the last corner, you know that someone's not going to have DRS to be able to make the challenge down that last straight. And it kind of took the air out of that battle, like maybe 10 seconds earlier than it really needed to. But it was a good charge by Lando.
Yeah.
It made it good up. And you know what? Yeah, he's making up time, but he has to be stuck behind Carlos Sainz for 20 laps. So was a move really on? I don't know. But it made the last 15 or so laps interesting in a race that up until lap 46, 47 had been pretty dull.
Yeah, I got myself so excited, and then I just felt sick after he had that one little moment where he went wide. I was just like, oh, come on, man. At least make the charge. But it was pretty amazing nonetheless. I mean, Max still won, but we had someone challenging him that was not Checo. So
in a second margin of victory, it was like point,
it was like seven. Yeah,
I don't know what it was, but
yeah,
which is a massive improvement. So yes, while it was a dull race because not much really happened, it gave us the thing that all the rest of the more exciting races lack.
Yeah.
So you can't say we want a race for the win and then say the race was boring. Right. So we're just happy with that. We got part of what we enjoy, different part than normal, but it was a good race.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a terrible, really dull, really boring, terrible chain, but then it ended without a safety car, which is good.
Yeah.
With 100% probability.
I wonder what would have happened if we had gotten a safety car. Who knows?
At that point, it would have been as probably Max. It would have eaten away a 6-second lead of Max's and made Jason very happy. And
yes,
you know,
can only speculate. But I guess winners and losers. Obviously, Max is a winner on the day. I mean, what is he up to now? 5 out of 7 races are we through now? He's won 5 out of 7. Yeah, pretty.
And I think that Checo was so far back, really kind of, you know, Lando got driver of the day on the TV show. He had a really good day.
Yeah.
But Max didn't have it all his own way. It wasn't handed to him. Yeah. So Max, he did a really good job. So I agree with him on your winners list.
Yeah. And then you got, you know, Lando did drive immaculately towards the end there and was almost able to make a push. So, you know, got to put him on there too. And maybe you didn't hear much from the Ferraris during this race, but the first podium in however many years, it's been 18 years or whatever it was, the crowd was going crazy when, you know, Charles got the trophy and lifted it up in the air. That was awesome. And then you got to put Yuki on there, right? I mean, he's driving out of his mind.
Yuki had a great weekend, you know, great qualifying and putting some great moves on the track. And, he finished in the points in the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he finished 10th.
Yeah, I think so.
The thing is, it seems like Yuki is doing everything he possibly can to get that Red Bull seat.
Yeah.
But Red are just not interested in Yuki for that seat at all.
Doesn't make any sense.
They put Daniel Ricciardo into that other V-carb. And said, all right, your benchmark is Yuki. And Yuki's wiped the floor with it.
Yeah.
Right? And yet, then no one's really talking about, I mean, the team, no one's talking about Yuki for that speed. Just all, well, if it's not going to be Danny Rick, then Perez is going to stay in the seat. And, you know, he's finished 1-2 with Mac, like the first two races. But now Checo gone, you know, done what he's done the last few seasons, which is get through the first 3 or 4 races and then just lose momentum and fall away.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, if Checo was to be retained, it would be like such a, I don't know. I don't know what the word is for it, but
the slap in the face to Yuki.
In the face, thank you. It would be a slap in the face to Yuki because Yuki's done everything asked of him this season. And I doubted him at times, right? That season and stuff, especially when Lawson came in and showed him that. But I don't know. Checo, I think it's time to move on from Perez.
I agree.
Decisions.
Yeah.
And I mean, like you said, I think that if the season were to stop right now and they had to choose someone, if they didn't choose Yuki, that would be just so wrong. He's the best, other than Max, he's the best of the other three so far this season. Yeah. Like, by far. It's not even close.
Yeah, but the one thing that has happened is that I think other teams have started paying attention. Like, the one rumor that I heard in the last couple of days was that if Audi aren't going to land signed this season to partner Hülkenberg, that they may go after Yuki.
That'd be cool. Or Mercedes.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Wow.
Could you actually, that one I hadn't thought about. It's like, you know, because they're just trying to keep that seat warm for Kimi Antonelli, right?
Right.
And he didn't set the world alight this weekend, but yeah, that's an interesting one, you know, because Aston Martin and then getting the Honda engine for what, 26?
Yeah.
You know, it's Fernando. How long is Fernando going to stick around? But obviously, Yuki is Honda. He's the Honda guy, right?
Yeah.
So we end up going where Honda go. Or maybe Aston Martin finally see the light and say, thank you, Lance, but, you know, we need a proper driver. And not the proper driver. You know, he's had enough. He's had ample opportunities to prove that he can hang with the big boys now since Fernando's been there. And he's not really done it, even though Fernando had a bit of horror this week and ends on the loser list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read that they basically turned it into like a testing session with Fernando. They put all the different tire compounds on. They ran him as with different stints, just trying to work out what's going on. You know?
Yeah. I mean,
that's nice. Yeah, I mean, that's what you've got to do. When, especially like we were talking earlier, if you're not getting the performance on the track that your simulations are telling you, you've got to use the track time, do whatever you need to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, like we said, Checo, Fernando, and then Albon, who just, I mean, it's not even necessarily Albon's fault, I guess, other than not qualifying well, but just unfortunate with the pit stop. And then they just called it quits by the end of it. So Williams, I mean, are just the struggling all season.
It was just their way at all.
Yeah.
Which, it's terrible, because I've always been a fan of Williams, and I have a particularly big soft spot for them now. But things have got to turn around. It was Laurent Mekies on when I was listening to, I think, the F1 Nation podcast on the drive home from work today. He was saying Williams are still heavy, they're still overweight. As soon as they get the weight off the car, they're going to be serious challenges to them. You know, those guys are actually looking at who's behind them and trying to protect themselves with upgrades of their own. But it's been tough sledding for Williams
this
season so far.
And I guess Martin, let's talk about Coops.
Yeah, Coops have won like a good week for a lot of people. You know, obviously no big retirements, especially in the big the big team. So Jackal with the top score, 320 points this week, followed by Copley GP and Trelvis Gresley with 300 points. I didn't do too badly myself, 245 points. I managed to actually rise up.
Was that with getting pole? Did you put? I put.
I don't know. I went a bit wacky. I think I even put Lando to win. I was drinking. Jason must have put something in my drink, I think.
I didn't even do that.
My papaya. Maybe it was the papaya juice I was drinking this week or something. But we still got R. Heatley hanging on to top spot, but SJC 327 moves up into second place, and Jonathan drops down into third. Who are the notables? Mark the top of us. Mark Cooper. You've always got an eye out for Mark Cooper. She was one of
the biggest leaderboard or the biggest moving up board.
She moved up to, she passed me on her way by. She got a top score. But Mark is running the highest of us. But he dropped down 7 points to 22nd. Prediction consensus still slowly making his way up.
Jeez.
He's up to 27th. And Nick, you went up 42 spots to 36th. So I don't know how far I have to scroll to see where you are.
Not much. 13, baby.
Oh, you went up 13 points to 178th. Yeah. So, you know, definitely.
Fall from grace is hard.
Checo territory down there.
Yeah, seriously. Alonso territory. That's essentially what I'm doing. I'm just test running. I'm just trying out all these lineups, you know? Just like Fernando today.
Well, let's see. It's only a few days. Only a few days till we race in Monaco this weekend.
Well, I wouldn't say race. We qualify in Monaco.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah, these cars around, there is no space at all. I mean, I've said this before. I've been to Monaco. You've been to Monaco, Nick, I think?
I've been to Monaco.
Not for the race, but...
Although, actually, we were talking about your 50th. Sorry, the viewers were giving away Martin's age. You have a milestone birthday coming up, Martin.
I do.
And I'm thinking, you know, we're going to go and do our trip for your milestone birthday, but for my milestone birthday, when it comes along in like 3 years, Monaco Grand Prix.
You can do, if you want to drop like 10 grand or maybe 15 grand, you can do the whole helicopter, hotel.
Helicopter, you know, watch.
Seats in a cafe or something. I don't know what they give you for seats or something, but
yeah, I'm watching from a yacht. And you're joking, Martin.
definitely worth looking into. But yeah, yeah. Monaco, this
beautiful one. Place.
Oh,
you got 40th favor.
Yeah, always. Sometimes it throws up something interesting. You never know what can happen. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah,
aims a quick. You know, that always throws something in there.
Yeah. Could be some weather. A couple of years ago, there was a lot of rain. We had Charles's famous, you know, Charles just can't get this Monaco bug off his back, right? He qualified on pole, but crashed his car and couldn't race. And then it was at Monaco where they told him to pit and then changed their mind and said stay out, but he was already pitting. And
yeah,
it's just been a disaster for him. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and if you don't enjoy the Monaco Grand Prix next week, then the Indy 500 is right after that.
That's right. That's right.
Qualifying. That should be exciting.
Was this weekend and
racing. And the Coca-Cola 100 in NASCAR here in Charlotte.
Yeah. Which Kyle Larson will be driving in both of those races on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, one of those. Interesting.
For qualifying, he had to take a helicopter. He made it into the top six. His first time ever in IndyCar made it into the top six of qualifying. And then he just took a helicopter to go do some all-star race for last weekend. And then he's driving in both the NASCAR and the Indy 500 again next week, which is pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
He has to give up the corner. I had to bounce ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and join us next time for our review of the 2024 Monaco Grand Prix. See you then.